Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Out of Spec podcast. I am your host, Jordan, joined by Kyle Connor, who is fresh returned from some recent travels. Some we can't talk about yet, but one we can, which is the Hyundai Ioniq 5 in, not just on the streets, but I mean, you had this thing on track. Laguna Seca, videos have been flying in, and everyone's thoughts and feelings have also been flying in, because it seems like, to me, a pretty special car. And this is in an era of EVs where it's hard to make them sometimes drive special.
This episode is made possible by the support we get from Fort Collins Kia. If you are in the market for any electric Kia, not only do they never add market adjustments, they will deliver your car to you anywhere in the 48 contiguous states for out-of-spec viewers. More information in the link in the show notes.
So this is on one hand, an Ioniq 5 that is like $60,000+. On the other hand, it rips for a bargain when you're comparing it to, I don't know, recently I was on the track with the Porsche Taycan Turbo GT, which is $250,000 starting before you add, you know, color, contrast, stitching and all that. So the Ioniq 5 in, Kyle, I don't know, where do we even start with this car? It's so cool.
Well, yeah, you could view it in both of those ways. This is the most expensive Hyundai Ioniq, or it is like the cheapest performance hot hatch on the market. Let me break down what this car is, first of all. The Ioniq 5 is Hyundai's electric midsize, small crossover SUV thing. It is technically an SUV. And basically they take that shell. It's built on the EGMB platform. They change the battery chemistry so it has a little bit more capacity. Although I think that's not necessarily to do with 5N and more to do with the mid-cycle refresh of Ioniq 5. It's just getting the new cell. This is the first 2025 that we're seeing. I'm pretty sure the rest of the cars will get the now 84 kilowatt hour battery pack up from 77. Minor change, but welcome for sure. And then they basically just dial it up to 12. And it's different in the sense of like the Genesis GV60 performance and the EV6 GT, because those are taking the standard car and dialing them up, adding software, maybe a motor here, something like that. This is a Porsche GT level of like optimization and hardcore upgrades that we've never really seen from a car in this price point. It's equivalent, I would say, almost to like when Mini did the John Cooper Works GP, and they would go, you know, full coilovers, chassis stiffness, and just like way motorsports level approach from these high-end specialty cars applied to a relatively mundane vehicle. And that's what's happening with 5N. 5N is all the way down to the body in white, has extra welding, extra structural adhesive, completely changed suspension. Not one piece of suspension is shared from the standard car. The kinematics are changed. The load ratings are changed on everything. The compliance is totally different. It's just way more hardcore. And they put 641 horsepower in the thing, which is 400 and something kilowatts, high 400s. It's great. But you still get good driver assistance. You still get the Bose sound system. So they like give you a lot of the luxury stuff and all the performance one top spec in this crazy hot hatch SUV that looks incredible. And Jordan, it's only 66 grand. That seems like a bargain.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of good changes to this. Kyle, you like lower seating positions, right? This car has like 1.6 inch lower seating position. Is that like noticeable?
It is noticeable, and it's not enough. It needs like 1.6 feet lower. It's so, an SUV. I may be on the Ioniq 6N. I'm sure that car will launch at some point. That's a car I think no one will actually buy. Not because it's going to be a bad car. It's just a limited market for a performance sedan. Yeah. Could be interesting, though. I'm looking forward to driving it if and when that ever happens. But the 5N has completely different seats. Close to bucket seats, but they're not. They're still adjustable manually, and they just don't go low enough. So that would be one of my main complaints on the car, but don't let that fool you. Like, the rest of the car is amazing.
Yeah, so interestingly, how it looks, it is a little bit wider, a little bit longer, although part of that's just aerodynamic added and fender flares. It looks amazing. And the interesting thing about the Ioniq 5, even not the N, just in general, is it looks smaller than it is because of the proportions. The longer wheelbase has that mind-defeating effect of making it look small. But it has a wheelbase longer than a Palisade or a Telluride, which is wild. But how does it drive? Does it drive super nimbly, or is it like still feel slightly SUV-ish? Like, do you wish it was just smaller, like more golf-sized, like Golf R mentality, or are you pretty thrilled with how they've set this up?
No, I'm thrilled with how they set it up because it's so spacious still on the inside. I think I hesitate to call it a hot hatch because it is not that small. And it also weighs almost 5,000 pounds. By the time a human sits in it, it's 5,000 pounds because it's 4861 dry.
Wow.
And so you're driving a 5,000 pound SUV. It's heavy. It is, you know, all of those things. It's not a hot hatch. Now, if they can find a way to get 2,000 pounds out of it, or even 1,500 pounds out of it and shrink it, that would be amazing. I would love an ID3 or Golf R electric variant. That could be really fun. But the one thing that I think Hyundai really did here that I've never seen from any other automaker in this pricing category, and really it's very equivalent to, I keep coming back to the Porsche GT3 level or GT4 level or one of these motorsports derived cars, which is extreme focus on driving performance, both to be silly and drift and do stupid stuff sideways. The car's fully engineered to do that, but then also to be hardcore and set lap times consistently. It will thermal overheat, but it just, they really focused on getting as much, high power duration out of it before derating. And to me, I've just never seen this level of obsession for performance at this price range. Tesla Model 3 is the car that comes to mind when people ask me, like, what's the most fun EV you can buy for the money? Model 3 Performance has track mode, has a great chassis. The base suspension that it comes with is kind of meh. We're all kind of out, not into that. But there's plenty of aftermarket solutions. And then Model 3 Performances can be really fast and really fun and have great thermal longevity. But you're still dealing with a primarily, at least common vehicle to the standard car. It's very little changes in terms of body and white and other components, motors, even the dual motor and the performance share the motors. And the new Model 3 Performance is about to launch any minute, any day, any second, I don't know. And we really need to see what the heck they did with the refreshed or re-engineered or Highland Model 3 Performance. But comparing the Ioniq 5N to, I would say, the best performance EV in the pricing category, the Model 3 Performance, which I own that car. This is another step above in terms of technology, engineering, refinement at speed. However, I bet the Model 3 performance is still faster around a track. That would be my guess. It just weighs so much less. Model 3 performance is 1,000 pounds lighter. It's a sedan, not an SUV. You know, if you're really going for lap times, I think most people are still going to go Model 3 because you can pick them up used for like 25 grand or something. Yeah. And anyway, it's just, that'll be an interesting video that we can do. Model Y performance versus Ioniq 5N is the most fair comparison, I would say. But dude, I've just never seen anything where they've gone so hardcore into a car like this.
So there's a lot of customization with the driving characteristics with all the in-cars, actually. They all have that interesting display where it's like a spider web of like options, and there's like three different options and all these different categories, which to some people is overwhelming. Did you find that like your preference? Like, do you like to be able to tweak every single little thing, but is it also confusing to remember what you can and can't do? Like, when can you use in-pedal versus the other options, and is that overwhelming?
I will say it was the first time I've ever reviewed a car and I was genuinely confused as to what features did, because I, you know, like most people when they got into new BMW M cars, like I just had a new M5 on track as an example, M5 competition, awesome car, love that thing. And it's got menus of settings, but I just had to get in there. I needed to make a quick video. I was just driving a big thing and I was just like, boop, 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 got it. I know what everything does. I want, you know, four-wheel drive sport. I want DSC off, and I want, you know, whatever. I got my shifting settings. It all made sense. Here in the Ioniq 5N, I'm like, what's the difference between N pedal and then the normal regen, and then there's N race, but then I have endurance and sprint, and then I have N preconditioning, but I don't know when I can use that. You know, is that only when the car is parked, or, and I can't use that when charging? And I was just like, what on earth? And what was even more crazy was that the people at the event couldn't tell me. Like, I'm sure if I asked around, but what really kind of bugged me about it was so convoluted that I asked multiple people what things did and got like five different answers from them. And the information's definitely out there. And I think I have a really good idea on 90% of the functions and features. And I really got the car dialed in for track use how I would like it, I think. And I say I think because I don't really know for sure. It's going to require some time. But this is a vehicle that you can't just get in, hit a default setting, and know that that's how you want the car. You really got to experiment. You got to try with things. And I guess if I was going for a hardcore enthusiast weekend driving car, maybe this isn't my preference. Like, I put up a video today on the Porsche 718 GTS. It just has a sport button. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's just like, do you want to be comfortable or dial it up? And it's like, okay, those are your options. And, you know, Porsche engineers were like, we just made it the best option for what you're trying to do. Versus here, it allows you so much range of customization that I think it can actually, in the electric age, be pretty exciting for folks who come from the video game world. Like, I grew up driving Gran Turismo or Assetto Corsa, and now I'm getting into a car and I have all of these settings, and it's going to take me time to figure it out, and it keeps the car interesting. It keeps me playing around with new features. So I can see a group of people who will hate it and a group of people who will love it. I'm in the love it camp. I think it's cool. I think I like that I need to take the time to really figure out what works well for me.
Yeah. So I guess the elephant in the room is the kind of simulated shifting situation. I want to address that kind of early on in this video, because that's what a lot of people are talking about. That's a very unique thing about this car. Some people, actually, everyone seems to have an opinion, whether or not they've driven the car. And let's face it, most people haven't driven the car. But there's a lot of fiery opinions on whether this is cool or whether it's a gimmick. And also, how does it actually affect the real world situation of tracking it? Obviously, you can drive this as a normal EV, you know, without fake shifting, just give you full beans and just normal EV everything.
Yeah, why don't you explain what it is? Because I think people are like shifting in an EV. Like, yeah, I'm sure we have viewers who don't even know what we're talking about.
So basically, the Ioniq 5N can simulate the experience of basically driving a Hyundai in-car, or really any car, I guess. But they're aiming at the Hyundai in-car experience with a dual-clutch transmission, shifting it on track. It'll redline at like 8,000 RPM, which is a bit more than like an Elantra N. And then actually even simulate the sounds and even the varying level of torque at these different experiences. A lot of people who were at the event that you were at have said that like it's they were more impressed than they expected. Like it sounds gimmicky. And when Hyundai first unveiled they were doing this, people were like, okay, interesting, but is anyone going to actually use that, or are people just going to like turn it off? Like a lot of the fake electric car sound, that's nothing new. A lot of electric cars have that. And they have three sounds with this car that you can pick from. One of them is trying to emulate a 2-liter four cylinder turbo engine from like an Elantra N. I don't know if it's like that spot on. And it even has sounds inside the car and outside the car. So it's one way to do it. And I think it does make it interesting. And so I'm wondering what your impression of that is. And it, does it like add to the experience, or does it detract from someone who's really trying to just set a lap time?
It's dumb. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm all for whatever features are in cars that people enjoy. And I think it is a nice feature for some people. And for me, I don't ever have to think about it because I can just turn that off. So it's not like it's there and I'm affected by it all the time. So if you don't like it, just don't think about it. Pretend it's not even in the car. If you do like, well, here's the thing, what it does. It simulates like the torque dips, a rev bend pretty well, Jordan. But you're not convinced it's real. No one's going to get in that car and go, wow, that's a combustion car, because it doesn't really simulate load. And in my driving review, I have a full hour and 20 minute long driving review that went up today. I really spent some time on this, which is like, if you're really bored, it might be fun to play around with, because it's like a video game at that point. And Hyundai's excuse is that, well, you want a level of sound on track to gauge your speed. But that's dumb. Because I've driven EVs on track for years, and it takes you maybe 5 or 10 minutes and then you're used to it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm primarily tracking electric cars, and I don't need sound. I mean, we can go super hard in anywhere, and I'm not wishing I had an engine note to determine how fast I'm going. In general, driving on track for new track drivers, it is an odd experience because tracks are so wide. And so it's more of a visual thing that, you know, makes you think you're going slower than you are. But the sound component of the car, I mean, people still have the same effect in combustion cars. They go too hot in the corners on a 40-foot wide track or 50-foot wide track, as an example. So I don't think there's a real benefit. And in fact, if you're really tracking the car, it's slower because it's simulating torque dips. It's simulating a power curve. It's not giving you power all the time. So any hardcore driver who's chasing times, they're not using this.
Is it a plausible explanation that, well, not why they did it, but is it possible that using this would give you a bit better thermal longevity because it's not giving you quite everything all the time? But did you run into any thermal issues while you were on track?
Okay, so all the journalists who said we actually drove hard at this event, it was like three laps and then a 10-minute cool down. So no one was able to really test the cars. And based off the driving I saw on track, a lot of people went pretty slow. So they let me go like with one of their drivers afterwards when I was like, guys, I'm sorry, but I need to make a video with this car. Like, you got to let me go. And they're like, okay, why don't you follow, you know, Paul Dellenbach, who's a Pikes Peak racer. And so he and I went out for a few laps, and that's how I was like, okay, cool. We can actually get some speed on. But I was like, I didn't come to a racetrack to drive 2 miles an hour behind five people that are almost driving off the track in front of me. Yeah. Yeah, thermal longevity, I don't think this matters so much. There is a function in there that's similar to like Mach-E unbridled extend, which is D-rate max power. So you just have consistent power output, basically puts it to like a nominal power output from the beginning. Just give me sprint mode. If it gets hot, it'll slow down and I can drive around that.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, well, the shifting thing, if you're really bored in traffic, that's the only time I think it could be fun.
So just give full beans all the time. It is interesting. Everyone's different ways around this. And, you know, like Porsche is like doing the whole boost mode or attack mode or push to pass. And then, you know, we just had an i5 on test that had its own kind of boost situation. Everyone's doing this different kind of, here's a little bit extra, or in this case, taking away a little bit of the power.
I hope for my own sanity that one day I can understand why this is beneficial to the consumer to have any sort of this boost function, because there's also N-Grin boost on this car,
yeah,
which is a terrible name. grin boost. It's like, okay, you're already at 600 horsepower. What's the difference between 600 and 640? That's not what is what's going to create the smile on your face. So yeah. It's like, just it's so gimmicky, but that's part of the appeal of this car, is how it feels like a PlayStation 4 on wheels. You know, it's like that Sony Gran Turismo 5 just coming into, like, when graphics started getting really good. It's like that era of just so much tech. And it's like, this could only come out of a country like South Korea. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to appreciate how much simulated stuff is in there, and the real, that you can shut all that crap off. And it is backed up by hardcore physical components that do let the car rip. So I think for hardcore drivers, you can turn all the gimmicks off and you're left with an incredible chassis with a great powertrain. And I would say, without really fully testing it, but my guess is, really good thermal management system. Yeah. And if you're, you know, 17 and this is your first car, which is going to be the case for some people that have a lot of money or whatever, and it's going to be a cool first car and you might wrap it around a tree, but that's also the first car experience that you need to have. You know, it does have the gimmicks and the games and the functions, I think, that a younger buyer is looking for. Yeah. And so it's finally the first competitor, I would say, to Model 3 or Model Y performance.
And were you able to get it sideways much? I mean, can you talk about a little bit of the torque distribution capabilities you have? Notably with Tesla, if you have track mode, you can, you know, send more torque forward or backwards. How well was that dialed in with this car?
Did not even get a chance to try that. So that is something I really need to try when we have with a week. They wouldn't let us do it.
Okay.
And so I was like, is it not working? And they're like, well, we just don't want people to crash.
That makes sense.
And I'm like,
we've seen how some people drive at these events.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I saw stuff that I was like, I can't believe you're letting some people do this. So yeah, that's where I'm also confused, because I think that's more of a handling balance than a torque distribution. I would say it probably feels very similar to Tesla track mode, where you can say, okay, I want it super drifty or super understeery, rather than I actually want 80% of the power to go to the rear, because you can only do the maximum that single motor has on that axle. Even if you set it 100% rear, you go straight and floor, it's still going to use the front motor because it's going to give you power.
Yeah.
And that we need to play around with a bit more. But I think what this car has is, of course, enough performance cred to keep anyone busy and satisfied for months of ownership, which for a lot of car enthusiasts, that's tough to stay interested in a car that long.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's comfortable enough and cool enough to live with on a daily basis. This is something that you would look forward to getting into every day, because the suspension, when you dial it to full soft, I found to be, yeah, stiffer than the standard car, but very compliant. And actually, on the small bumps, you feel a lot of stuff. But on the big undulations with these electric dampers, I think it might even be smoother than the standard Ioniq 5 on big undulations. And the steering is incredible. Even at low speed, you can appreciate how awesome the steering is. And in a car in this price category and this weight category, you never get steering like this. It was really good.
Nice. Were you able to play with the, I guess there's another level of region with this car, like super intense track focus region? Were you able to try that at all?
Yes. I ignored Hyundai telling me not to do it, and I did that. And it's really cool. What I couldn't totally figure out is, also, like, why is that not just on when you put it in N mode? These are the things that I'm like, the configurations of drive modes, yeah, I still am struggling with. But it gives you a ton of regen off throttle, but it still will blend more under braking. And so even if you're not in this mode and you hit the physical brake pedal, it's still giving you full regen. And it can regen a limited amount through ABS, which is nice as well.
Mm-hmm. Do they say, like, the kilowatt capability of the regen? Like, Taycan's like, oh, 400 kilowatts.
Yeah, it's 320 or 330.
Okay, decent.
Which is still a ton.
Yeah, yeah. And this car also charges great. Like, I feel like it is good for a lot of people. And I guess that is something that struck me about some of the other Hyundai in cars in general, is they're just, they can be daily drivers, but you can also, like, absolutely shred on them. And sure, they're not going to be as focused as some of the actual track cars, but it's kind of fun that you can take something like this to the track. And it just looks freaking cool.
Well, here's the thing, Jordan. If a Taycan appeals to you because they're incredible to drive and they're fast, right? Mm-hmm. That means that you are going to be limited to a Taycan Turbo or Turbo S or Turbo GT. So your minimum $150,000 spend. to get into a, you know, a Cross Turismo, a Turbo S Cross Turismo is over 200. Turbo GT, you're at two, you know, a quarter million. Let's just call it 250 by the time you got taxes and everything. If you're into those cars because of how they are on track and everything like that, but you can't afford that, and a standard Taycan is not going to satisfy a performance enthusiast who's looking to do track days and stuff. It still has a lot of tactile feel, and normal Taycan's great, but it's not a race car. This is that level of engineering and that level of, certainly not going to say acceleration or cornering speed or anything like that, but that level of thrill for a quarter of the price.
Yep. That's what I gather. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Model 3 Performance or Ludicrous, whatever they're calling it, which is coming out literally any day now, supposedly.
Yeah,
but then also will Tesla, like, quote unquote, answer to this whenever they do update the Y? Because it felt like the last Y Performance was somewhat of an afterthought performance thing, just like, okay, well, now we have to do that. But now that they're seeing competition in this space, which is weird enough, I'd never thought of, like, give me a small performance SUV. But now we're seeing so many performance SUV variants because everyone thinks they need an SUV.
Yeah, so. Macan Turbo, EV6 GT, this one, Mach-E GT, all of these vehicles are coming.
Yeah, so I'm genuinely curious about the Model Y refresh whenever that happens, plus whenever it goes performance. Who knows how long it'll be, but when can people actually get their hands on these?
Right now.
Dive in. They're already in people's hands. Great.
I just saw someone, I'm trying to think where it was, maybe Reno Hyundai. Anyway, mm-hmm. A dealer just got theirs, and they're like, it's available and for sale.
Yeah. Yeah, no, our friend Forrest filmed one a few weeks ago, and it was privately owned. And
so, oh, yeah, great, yeah.
Great. Okay. So they're out there at dealers. Now I wonder if markup's going to be an issue, but at the same time, the market's fallen a little bit and I don't know.
I think similar to Taycan Turbo GT, this is a car as a global product makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of markets that are heavily transitioning to EVs. And also, like, if you look up Europe car enthusiasts or even, especially South Korean car enthusiasts or Chinese car enthusiasts, a lot of them are much more accepting of electric than American car enthusiasts right now. And so I think in our market, these are going to be going for, like, don't pay over for one of these. They're going to build as many as they can sell. Pay sticker or go or even maybe even find a deal on one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So cool car. I can't wait to try it out. A lot of people are in that same boat. So maybe a dealer near you has one. Go check it out. Any final thoughts? Or are we just looking forward to testing it on all of our normal tests whenever we can get one?
Yeah, looking forward to the test. But the final thought is now we have a really cool, funky, exciting, spicy is the word I used a lot for this review. Mm-hmm. Hot, compact SUV that is enjoyable in all driving scenarios. It satisfies the combustion guys for wanting that bridge to electric with a lot of the gimmicks. It satisfies the hardcore EV performance guys like myself, you, Drew, as an example, that we just want it to be as fast as possible. And for the money, this is definitely going to be up there until we see what Tesla does. This is exciting. Competition. Hell yeah. It's always just been the Model 3 Performance that was an attainable, spicy electric sports car. And now we got this. This is awesome. And Jordan, I really think they nailed it. No question. They put everything the N division had in this car. Talking to the engineers, the head of N, I'm fully convinced this was a, like I keep mentioning, a Porsche GT level of engineering inside a car that only costs $66,000. And I'm here for it. And I think this is one of the most exciting products of the year to launch.
Hell yeah, brother. Great. Well, we'll get it on test. We'll do all the normal boring tests, quote unquote. I mean, some people are still going to want to know how well it does, especially on range, because notably range takes a hit.
Yeah.
Because it comes bigger, with, like, tires.
Yeah, so it's 275s all around. It's a bigger battery, and it has so much less range than the small battery cars that it's compared to. It's 221-mile EPA.
Wow. At least it charges well. Allegedly. We'll find that out too. But anyways, thanks for watching another Out of Spec podcast, and we'll see you guys on another one very soon. Cheers.